Welcome. And hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us here today. We are so truly glad you're here, ready to share a moment with us as if we're sitting together, just having a real conversation. Hi, I'm Pat.
And hi, I'm Jesse.
Today, we're taking a deep dive into a topic that touches many lives, often without us even realizing it. Trauma bonding. We've pulled together a stack of your sources, you know, from clinical reviews and personal stories to psychological explanations to help us unpack this complex idea.
Yeah, our mission today is to maybe extract the most important insights, clarify what trauma bonding truly is, how it develops, what it actually looks like, and maybe most importantly, how healing is possible.
Yeah.
We want to offer you a clear understanding so you can spot these dynamics, whether in your own life or, you know, observed in others.
Okay, let's unpack this then. The term trauma bond gets thrown around quite a bit, doesn't it? And it can mean different things to different people. What's the core, maybe the clinical definition we need to start with?
That's a really crucial distinction. In psychology, trauma bonding is specifically about an unhealthy emotional attachment between an abuser and their victim. It's not about two people bonding because they've both experienced a similar trauma, like surviving an accident.
Oh, right. That's different.
Exactly. That's more accurately called shared trauma, or maybe bonding over shared trauma, which, you know, that can be healthy or unhealthy, depending. But the term trauma bond itself, that was coined by Dr. Patrick Carnes back in 1997, focusing specifically on how people bond to those who actually hurt them.
So it's this kind of dysfunctional attachment. Here's where it gets really interesting for me. How does someone become so attached, like so bonded to a person who's causing them harm? It seems so counterintuitive.
It really does. But believe it or not, it's a survival mechanism. It's hardwired into our nervous system. See, our brain's primary mission is just keep us alive, right?
Right. Survival first.
So when someone we should be able to trust, like a family member, maybe a friend or a partner, is intermittently kind and then abusive, the brain makes this sort of calculation. It's like, okay, this person can hurt me. But if I'm very nice, if I'm very good, and I love them, maybe they'll keep me safe.
Wow.
It's a flawed computation, absolutely. But it's the brain's attempt to establish some kind of safety in a really unsafe situation.
So it sounds like the brain almost gets hijacked, creating these neural associations between love, or what feels like love, and really unhealthy behavior.
Exactly. That's a great way to put it. And this dynamic, it typically follows a repeating cycle. That's a key characteristic of trauma bonds. Lenore Walker actually identified a classic three-part cycle of abuse that helps explain this.
Okay, take us through that cycle. Understanding how it works seems crucial for recognizing it.
Absolutely. So phase one is tension building, tensions increase, maybe communication breaks down, and the victim feels fearful, you know, like they're walking on eggshells, trying to placate the abuser. Verbal abuse often starts here.
That sounds exhausting. Just constant anxiety.
It is. Then you have phase two, the acute battering episode or the incident. When that tension peaks, the verbal, emotional, or even physical abuse occurs, and it's often unpredictable, triggered more by the abuser's state than anything the victim did.
So it feels completely out of the victim's control.
Completely. And then comes phase three, the honeymoon phase. This is also called reconciliation or calm. The abuser might express remorse. They might minimize the abuse, make apologies, suddenly act all loving and charming again.
The I'm sorry it won't happen again part.
Exactly. And this phase is what really strengthens the bond. It creates this false belief, this hope that the abuse won't happen again. Then there's a temporary calm period where the incident is sort of forgotten.
That honeymoon phase, it sounds like such a powerful hook, like a reinforcement drawing the victim back in.
It is. It's incredibly powerful. That intermittent reinforcement, you know, alternating between positive and negative treatment, it's a known psychological reinforcer. Super effective, unfortunately. It makes you confuse these really intense experiences with love, and it can create a kind of emotional addiction.
Mm-hmm.
We also see this elaborated in the seven stages of trauma bonding, which kind of expands on this cycle.
Seven stages. Okay, let's hear those.
Yeah, it often starts with number one, love bombing. This is just excessive displays of affection, flattery, trying to gain trust and dependence really quickly. Think grand gestures, intense talks, feeling like you've met your soulmate immediately.
Like that example you mentioned, the giraffe feeding trip.
Exactly. The client whose boyfriend planned this whole elaborate trip, themed gifts, everything, on their third date. It feels amazing, but it's overwhelming and fast.
Okay, so after the love bombing.
Stage two is gaining trust and dependence. The abuser works to establish trust, maybe seeming like a great listener, even winning over your friends or family. But then they get really offended if you doubt them, and they start maybe subtly at first, restricting you from your loved ones.
Isolating you.
Mm-hmm. Then stage three, criticism and devaluation. The abuser shifts. They start criticizing, making you feel small, insignificant. You start yearning for that initial approval, that love bombing phase, and you often start believing yourself.
Wait, they do wrong.
Exactly. Which leads into stage four, manipulation and gaslighting. This is where the abuser rejects or just completely rewrites reality. They make you doubt your own perceptions, your memory. It leads to so much confusion and disorientation.
Like Annika's story, trying to find hints in thousands of emails.
Yeah, exactly that. Being gaslighted over something seemingly small, but it makes you question your entire sanity, trying to find proof that you're not crazy.
That sounds utterly destabilizing.
It really is. And that leads to stage five, resignation and giving up, or submission and acceptance. The victim just becomes emotionally exhausted. They start accepting the abuse, becoming more dependent because their self-esteem is shattered. Maybe they fear for their safety. Codependency can really take hold here.
It's worn down.
Completely. Stage six is psychological distress or loss of self. Prolonged abuse just erodes your identity. It can lead to severe depression, anxiety, maybe substance abuse, withdrawing from everyone, feeling numb, even suicidal thoughts. You lose your boundaries, who you even are.
You don't recognize yourself anymore.
Right. And finally, stage seven, the repeating cycle or emotional addiction. The whole thing repeats, often getting worse because the abuser knows the victim probably won't leave. The victim gets conditioned to endure the bad stuff just for those little moments of positive reinforcement, believing maybe, just maybe, they can control the abuser's actions if they just try harder, love better.
Wow. That's a lot. It paints a really clear and frankly scary picture. So, okay, what does this all mean for someone listening, someone trying to figure out if this applies to them or maybe someone they know? What are the practical signs?
Yeah, let's make it really practical. There are several key signs you might notice. A big one is feeling like you just cannot leave your partner, even if part of you knows the relationship is unhealthy.
Like you're stuck.
Exactly. Or you find yourself blaming yourself unfairly for the abuse. You minimize their behavior or you make excuses for them, both to yourself and maybe to others.
Oh, they're distressed or they didn't mean it.
Right, those kinds of things. Also, avoiding expressing your true feelings about their behavior, being afraid to speak up, maybe you fixate on the relationship, constantly thinking about it, even if it's technically over.
Still caught up in it.
Yeah. And this one is common. Wanting to help and support your partner, wanting to fix them, even after the relationship has ended and despite all the harm they caused. Like Annika, writing those letters, hoping he'd come back and apologize.
That desire to help, even when it hurts you.
Mm-hmm. Also, that feeling of walking on eggshells all the time, living in constant fear of unpredictable moods or outbursts.
Waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Constantly. And questioning your reality because of the gaslighting. Doubting your own memories, your perceptions, and maybe just constantly craving their approval, needing that validation from your partner to feel okay.
It sounds like the abused person gets more and more isolated, right? Yep. Cut off from support and just totally dependent on the abuser.
Precisely. Abusers often actively work to cut victims off from family, from friends. Sometimes they create financial dependency too, which just cements the bond even further, makes leaving feel impossible. A good question to ask yourself maybe is, why am I attracted to this person in this relationship? If your answers are kind of vague, like, oh, there's just something about them, or we had this amazing connection right from the start.
The intense beginning.
Yeah, those can actually be red flags. Healthy relationships, they're built differently on empathy, consistency, trust, mutual respect, not those wild highs and devastating lows.
Okay, this all sounds incredibly challenging, almost overwhelming. But the crucial part, the hopeful part, is that healing is possible. So if someone recognizes these signs in themselves, what are the steps? How do you start to break a trauma bond?
Yes, healing is absolutely possible. It's a process, definitely takes time and effort, immense courage, but it is so worthwhile. The very first step, maybe the most crucial one, is simply acknowledging and identifying the trauma bond. Really seeing the cycle for what it is, recognizing that the relationship is unhealthy, that it isn't love. That recognition is huge.
Just naming it.
Yeah.
Seeing it clearly.
Yeah, that's foundational. Then, often, the next vital step is to go no contact. This is usually essential to really break that cycle.
Cut it off completely.
As much as possible, remove their contact info, block them on social media. Now, if you have kids together, obviously that's more complex. A therapist can help you set up very limited, necessary, structured contact. But for most people, no contact is key, even though it's incredibly hard emotionally at first.
Okay, no contact.
What? Strengthen your support network. This is so important. Reach out to trusted friends, family, maybe find support groups for people who've experienced abuse. Sharing your story can be really empowering, and it helps you feel less alone.
You need people who get it.
Absolutely. And write it down. Journaling. Documenting your experiences helps you see the patterns more clearly, and it's a powerful way to push back against any gaslighting you experienced. It gives you your own objective record.
Like proof for yourself when you start doubting again.
Exactly. And this is a big one. Avoid self-blame. You have to actively work on this. Remind yourself over and over, if needed, that the abuse was never your fault, regardless of anything you did or didn't do. Replace that self-criticism with self-compassion. It's a practice.
Be kind to yourself through it.
Yes. And definitely get professional help. Find a therapist who is trauma-informed. They can help you understand the dynamics on a deeper level, process all those difficult emotions, rebuild your self-esteem, learn how to set healthy boundaries again, and spot unhealthy patterns in the future so you don't repeat them.
Therapy sounds key. Are there specific kinds?
Trauma-informed therapy is the umbrella, but things like EMDR, eye movement desensitization, and reprocessing are often mentioned as really helpful for processing the trauma itself. And alongside that, number 7, prioritize self-care. Really focus on your basic physical and emotional well-being. Eating well, trying to sleep, exercise, maybe meditation or mindfulness, reconnecting with hobbies you dropped. It's about rediscovering you outside of that relationship.
Reclaiming your identity.
Exactly. And finally, number 8, be patient. Please be patient with yourself. Healing takes time. It could be, 6-12 months of really consistent effort. But honestly, for some people, the echoes can last for years.
It's not linear.
Not at all. There will be ups and downs, good days, bad days. Mm. But every step forward, even tiny ones, is a huge success. Some survivors say it took them years, even decades, to feel fully free. So patience is key.
That's really important to hear. It takes time. Okay, one last really important question. What about for those supporting someone? If you see a friend, a family member, caught in what looks like a trauma bond, what's the best way to help? Because it can be incredibly frustrating to watch.
Oh, it really can be. And it requires a lot of patience from the supporter, too. The best approach is usually to listen without judgment. Really validate their feelings, their experience, even if it doesn't make sense to you from the outside. And try hard to avoid criticizing their decisions, or especially criticizing the abuser directly. That can often backfire, make them defensive, and push them closer to the abuser.
So don't say just leave them.
Probably not helpful, no. Instead, offer practical help if you can, maybe a place to stay. Help with research. Share resources gently, like information about trauma bonding or local support services. Encourage professional help, but always, always respect their autonomy. They have to make the decision themselves.
Just be a consistent, non-judgmental presence.
Exactly. Consistent support without showing frustration, that's incredibly valuable.
Well, for now, that's all from us. We've truly enjoyed our time together just connecting and sharing these thoughts with you. We hope that something we've discussed today has resonated with you, perhaps offering a little moment of clarity or maybe just a gentle sense of understanding.
Yeah, this deep dive into trauma bonding, it really shows us how complex human connections can be, doesn't it? And also how resilience is really found in understanding, in self-compassion, and importantly, in reaching out for support.
Thank you so much for joining us. We really, really hope you'll come back again next time for our next deep dive. If you found something meaningful in our conversation, please remember to like, share, and leave us a comment. It truly helps us connect with more people.
Goodbye, everyone. Take care.